Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
Guys, I'm looking at a story about what happened in Talladega yesterday. And for maybe those of you just waking up, maybe haven't had a chance to check out the news. There was a noose in Bubba Wallace's garage at Talladega yesterday in Alabama. Bubba Wallace, of course, is the only black driver on the NASCAR circuit. And somebody hung a noose in his garage before the race yesterday. There was supposed to be a race. It got canceled because of weather. We've talked a lot about what NASCAR is going to do or what the law enforcement should do to investigate this. LZ even says it's a hate crime, and this is why the police and the Justice Department should be brought in to investigate this. And yes, but I'm looking at the videos here, and I'm looking at this, and it's just this endless stream of Confederate flags and the airplane going over with Confederate flag, defund NASCAR. And I'm also looking at a bunch of statements from some drivers. Ryan Blaney, you're my brother and always will be. Don't let the people who are lower than life try to bring you down. They won't scare you because you're strong. I stand with you, pal, forever. Reagan Smith, this is disgusting and appalling. Key, what you said, there are cameras everywhere in the garage. I pray they caught this person, people on them. If not, then somebody knows who did this. Be a man, speak up, go out there and stomp on the loud pedal as hard as you can. Jimmy Johnson, I stand with you. Kyle Busch, I stand with Bubba. There are some guys that are coming out and saying that they're with Bubba Wallace. There's about 30 some odd guys that run in these races. That's about five that I just mentioned. Where's everybody else? Where's everybody else? Because this is what we've been talking about. This, yeah, I don't like it, but I also want to make sure that the guys that are buying my t-shirts and hats and my the sponsors that are on my racing suit and my car, that they're not offended either. That we're talking about a relatively low number of drivers that have responded to this, and they're the face of the sport, and they're the ones that could probably have the greatest impact. It's pretty quiet.
Well, what I was going to say is those names that you just ran off, pretty, you know, that's a pretty impressive list, right? I mean, but you like you said, the face of it. So the guys behind them aren't as, in terms of the media, probably aren't as sexy. You know, they want to be able to get the sexy names and put it out there. You know, it's just, it, like I said, man, it's going to be cameras. And you don't have to, so that the people know, you don't need bloodshed to get DNA. The mere fact of touching it, the noose, you can get DNA off of that. You know, so just touching it gives you a DNA. And so it'll be interesting to see, like LZ saying, how far up the government chain are they willing to go to find out who it was. And it's going to be interesting.
I think they're going to catch whoever did this. They're going to catch him. They're going to find out who did it, and they will punish whoever did it. And I'm not worried about that because NASCAR has obviously an incredible incentive to catch that person. Never mind just right and wrong. They need to catch that person, and I believe they will.
But I think you'll start.
But how does it change? How does it change? Because this clearly somebody in that sport felt comfortable enough to do what you did. Cameras everywhere. You're talking about God knows how many millions of dollars worth of equipment down in these garages. And somebody felt comfortable enough, brazen enough, to go in there and do this. This is not a rogue agent.
It could be a fan. It could be anybody that
probably not a fan, Key. I mean, there's no fans at the race. To get in that garage,
well, not necessarily a man. You know, people can finagle their way in anywhere. You know, I've told you as a kid, you can buy Gideons and go sit like, you can finagle your way is all I'm saying. So I'm saying is probably could be somebody on the outside somehow got access and got in the inside. Because if it's somebody from another team that's doing it, that would be a disaster to that entire team.
Be a disaster to the entire sport.
I don't know about the sport, Travis. Because NASCAR is actually trying to do something. Like they actually got rid of the flag. They're actually trying to do something. We already know what the sport was and who was around the sport and what type of people the sport attracted. So that's not going to change the actual sport. It's not going to do anything to the sport.
It's not what the sport attracted, it's what the sport reached out to try to get. And I think that's the real difference there. Is that the NASCAR didn't just happen to have a bunch of people who have a certain racial philosophy gravitate toward it. No, NASCAR went out and tried to recruit those people and embrace that culture and to try to make it an essential part of what NASCAR is.
I don't know where NASCAR was founded at.
In the South.
But all I can tell you is what I understand, it's a Southern sport.
It is.
So you don't have to go out in a track. I mean, go out and recruit them people. Them people are going to gravitate toward that automatically.
But up until now, they have not gone out of their way to try to distance themselves from that. Their attempt to not be what we thought they are just started right now.
But in all fairness to NASCAR, why would they, if they in the South and is making the money that they want to make, why would they? Why would they try to come to California? Ain't nobody in California into no damn NASCAR. Not at the level they are in North Carolina and in the Southern states. So why would they try to appeal to something that's not going to benefit them? Why would they do that?
You bring up an interesting point. I would simply say there are more than just racist white people in the South. That just because your sport started in a location, you have a choice as to what you can try to attract.
They made a conscious choice.
They made a decision to go a certain way.
Yeah, but it's a whole lot harder to go and get racist people out of New York to come and support you, racist people out of L.A. to come and support you, when it's easier to get it out of the South. So why would I want to invest all of that money to try to spread my wings in places that are going to be hard for me to attract the people?
But
when they
try to attract the people in the South that are not about that. Look, Edward, I know we're painting with some pretty broad strokes here. Not everybody in the South is a racist. Not everybody that is a fan of NASCAR is a racist. But that being said, NASCAR for years, decades, cultivated a good old boy Southern stars and bars culture where this stuff not only was tolerated, but it was for all intents and purposes encouraged.
And it comes back, Travis, it comes back to money. Their base is in the South. And it was easier for them to stay right there and attract that crowd that was spending that money. And then to the point where they allow the Confederate flags, because if they come out west or they go to a more liberal, whatever you want to call it, we're not going to allow those flags to be flown.
It's obviously very different, Key, but I've been out to the races in Fontana before. I've been to NASCAR events out at the California Speedway. That flag's there. It's there.
Oh, yes, I'm
sitting here. Key, you're talking about come out west. I was like, where out west do you think is safe? Because you got brothers hanging from the tree an hour from here. So where is this west location you're talking about?
Well, when I say west, I'm talking about just, you know, west of, you know, of the Mississippi, basically, to come, you know, past Texas into some of the western states.
Arizona?
My whole point, I'm not talking about one or two flags or one or two people. I'm talking about a foundation laid down like is in the Carolinas. They couldn't possibly do it. You're going to have small pockets. There's no question. There was a guy in San Diego County that walked into a Safeway grocery store with a KKK mask on like he was going shopping for Halloween. I get it. But I'm talking about the mass foundation. I'm not talking about a few people, small apples that trickle in. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the way that they got it in the Carolinas.
I think that's part of the issue with the drivers.
Key. UNLV, their name is called the Running Rebels. We're not talking about one or two people. There are industries all around that are built on this. UNLV is literally called the Running Rebels. I've lived in Arizona. This isn't a one or two person pocket thing here. There are Confederate flags everywhere in Arizona. Everywhere. I'm not making this up. And as I said, the official logo of a school in Vegas is named after the Running Rebels, with a Running Rebel Confederate soldier as his logo. We aren't talking about, you know, whether or not it's the South versus the West versus
I'm not talking about a logo of a school. I'm talking about setting your roots up in your foundation in a state or in a geographic area that supports what you stand for at the masses is what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about a logo of a school.
What we're talking about is culture, right?
Yes,
the culture of the sport. And this is why I think that while NASCAR can offer, I don't know if it's a rule change or whatever, but they're going to say, we're not going to have the flag at our races. Okay, good. They can issue an anti-racist statement. Okay, good. They can support Bubba Wallace's demonstrations and his protests. Okay, good. That's a great starting point. These are really positive steps in the right direction. The question I have is about the culture at large. Not that there aren't people inside that sport that are good people. The people that did issue statements that we're talking about Keselowski and David Reagan and Jimmy Johnson and some of the big names like we're talking about. I stand with Bubba. This shouldn't be tolerated. That's fine. But the culture of that sport, the reason that Kyle Larson was able to say the N-word during a video game racing event with his fellow racers is because the culture of that sport is okay with it. They might not love it, and it might be changing, and it might not be that everybody in there is okay with it, but the culture of that sport for decades has been that, and we thought that maybe we were getting a little bit better. Kyle Larson got bounced out pretty quickly. Bubba Wallace was embraced very quickly, but the culture of that sport is so deep-rooted with that garbage that it's not just going to be okay. We found the guy that put the noose in the garage. He's gone. Let's keep it moving. This is a sport. This isn't like if you had to try to root out racism from, I don't know, tennis or baseball or the golf tour. They've got it too. Every sport's got it, but the sports aren't built on what NASCAR is built on, and that's the challenge they have ahead of themselves.
It's not going to happen overnight. There has to be. It's changed. They booted the dude. They got the Confederate flag removed. Now you got an issue where they take one step forward, 10 steps backwards, because now there's a noose that's dropped into a garage. They got to figure that out. There's going to be something else that's going to come up. They got to figure that out. I mean, it's going to take time to clean up whatever it is that they need to clean up. And it probably won't ever get cleaned up because it's so ingrained and deeply rooted into the sport that it may not ever get cleaned up at the level that would satisfy people's taste buds.
I mean, I don't know. And it just seems as if, like, to my point, is that they purposely went after and wanted the sport to be this. Yes, it was started in the South, but they wanted everyone who was comfortable with this banner, if you will, to feel like this is a place where they can come and be themselves. And every single place that I've lived in, there's not just pockets, there are industries built on this branding, built on this mentality, built on this ideology. And while I can appreciate, you know, drivers like Dale Earnhardt Jr. tweeting out, you know, I stand with Bubba, I hope he wins, that's not going to get the job done. What's going to get the job done is you call out the racism for what it is. And this is why, Travis, I said at the beginning of the show, I'm irritated by the kid gloves they keep trying to handle this conversation with. This I stand with Bubba hashtag that's going around, that's fine and dandy, but you need to say what you're standing against. You need to say what you're standing against. You need to not just say, I support this one driver. You need to say, I'm against this institution.
Well, here's the
sport needs.
Here's what's going to happen. And hopefully not what's going to happen, but here's what could happen. Dr. Brown was with us last week. Okay. She was basically saying at the end of the day that she's there to help the Lakers and hopefully other organizations in professional sports and corporations around the world will see the difference making. When you bring people in like that, that could potentially help NASCAR understand what it is that they're missing. And to them, they may not even know, though, LZ, because they don't have anybody there really telling them. Yeah, I'm sure if we walk through the halls of NASCAR in Charlotte, ain't nothing but a bunch of white folks working in them halls. Ain't nobody of minority that has power to be able to sit in the room and be able to explain to them why it's not okay, why things are not okay, why we need to do things differently. I'm positive of that. I'm all for it if they hire me.
Back to Carolina. All right. We've asked a lot about a lot of different groups to get back to sports. Are we asking too much of one group in particular? That's next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. Key, refresh me if I'm wrong here, but did I see big fat steaks on your grill yesterday?
No, that was tri-tip.
Okay.
You know, tri-tip. There's a few beef eaters hanging around. Well, you got to have stuff for everybody. It was chicken. It was tri-tip. It was jalapenos. Jorge wasn't there, but I gotta have something for everybody.
It looked pretty good. I'm not gonna lie; those tri-tips were pretty well done.
Yeah, no, they was right. They was right in terms of, you know, I didn't really eat any of it, but I could taste the top of it. You know, you gotta just taste, pinch it a little bit just to make sure it's right.
Well, sure. I mean, you can't serve food without tasting it, right? That's you gotta be at least a little bit of a chef.
But it was fun. It was a good little deal, so to speak.
All right. Right before, or I should say right after we went off on Friday, UCLA football players told the world that they don't trust Chip Kelly in so many words.
Really?
yeah, right? Let me read you this very quickly. A document obtained by ESPN, first reported by the LA Times, 30 current and one former player had signed a letter asking that third-party health officials be put in charge of overseeing and enforcing health and safety guidelines, and that the guidelines be clearly and publicly stated. They're also asking for whistleblower protections to be provided for athletes and staff who want to report violations of any guidelines, as well as the ability to make decisions in regard to personal health without consequences in terms of loss or scholarship or retaliation from coaches in any form. I mean, this is basically, hey, you guys got to keep an eye on Chip Kelly here, because if you don't, he's going to run us into some serious problems with this virus. And if we decide not to play because it's unsafe, he's going to take it out on us. This is about as ugly a thing as you could say a coach is doing when it comes to the way that players are being handled in this particular time in the middle of this pandemic, that they do not trust the coach of the university to do the right thing.
Let's look at his track record, though. I mean, his track record doesn't help him at all. And in the players, you know, they there. They understand. You know, they got a feeling for him when he first got there. I mean, he ran off half the damn team. So a lot of them, you know, a lot of those individuals that's there, they get it. He recruited some of them, and some of them probably has holdovers for more. And they kind of understand who he is. And they know, oh, no, coach will do this, do that, so let's get our protection. Let's get it right. And at the end of the day, UCLA better do something, because they're not going to help. They're not going to come in. The players aren't going to help recruit. They're not going to practice. They're not going to do anything. So I'm sure that UCLA and their officials will get a third party to monitor the situation. I'm positive they'll do that.
It's a damning comment made. And if I was UCLA's president, who names are escaping me right now, but if I was the president, I would just do a checkup. Hey, man, everything all right over there?
Yeah, exactly.
Because your players have all literally said they don't think you have their best interest in heart. And that is not what we want for someone who's supposed to not just win games for us, but be a leader of men. Not someone who just win games for us, who's supposed to be a tenured staff member, a tenured professor, a tenured representation of this university. When you have the people that you went out and picked, when you have people you went out and picked all get together and say, we don't trust you with our safety, I got to ask myself, what are you not communicating to them? What are you not doing to them? What kind of culture are you fostering over there? Because these are people you inherited. These are now people that you went out and got, and they got to you, and they're like, yeah, we don't trust you now.
People that I know that's inside that football program over there, they say that dude just – they say he a mess, though. They just basically say he a mess at the end of the day. What does that mean? That mean he can't be trusted. He's standoffish. He don't talk to nobody. He always lying. Just all of the anything you can think of bad, that's Chip Kelly. You put bad football coach, bad organization in the dictionary, they're going to put his face right there.
Well, it's funny because Chip Kelly's always been odd, to use the, I guess, the most complimentary term. he's odd. He's one of these guys that doesn't do a lot of interviews. He doesn't make a ton of eye contact when he does these interviews. He's just, he's a strange dude. And his track record, like you said, Key, has followed him from Oregon to the Eagles to the 49ers and now to UCLA, that he's just one of these guys that no one really seems to trust. And like you said, you've talked to people inside the program. So have I. And you would think that when Chip Kelly came, because look, as a college football coach, Chip Kelly's track record is pretty extraordinary. And people are like, yeah, I don't know about this guy. And now you have the players are saying, yeah, I don't know about this guy. I would argue that I think every team should have a third party there to say, okay, look, this is fine. This isn't fine. These guys are doing too much. This is okay to do this over here. That way, you're, because the coaches are always going to push the limit. Coaches are always going to try to do a little bit more to get a little bit extra, and the players are going to be reluctant to push back for all the reasons that we just laid out right there. I'm worried about losing my scholarship. I'm worried about losing playing time. I'm worried about the coach deciding he doesn't like me and he's not going to do this, that, and the next thing with me. So they're going to be hesitant to do it. You're going to need a third party to be in there. UCLA, though, the players just know for sure. Oregon didn't have a statement from its players. USC didn't have a statement from its players. Michigan hasn't had a statement from its players in these sorts of things. But UCLA's players knew that this guy is that untrustworthy that they needed to put it out officially to tell the LA Times, to tell ESPN, that this guy will do bad things to us if we don't keep an eye on him. Please help us. That's a massive problem.
Of course, I'll be the president. If I'm the president, I need to make a phone call and say, hey, coach, can we talk for a second? Because this is not only are you not winning games, you've lost all the trust of players you went out and recruited. So I need to figure out what am I going to do with you. But to me, this is also the students are also smart, and they're seeing what's also happening nationally as well. I mean, let's have some real talk about the possibilities of there being no college football. Because that's where we're nearing right now. At least 30 LSU players have been in quarantine, according to Sports Illustrated. 23 positive tests in Clemson. 13 positive tests at Texas. 14 at Kansas State. The University of Houston has already had to pause its voluntary workouts. We see where this is barreling toward. And now you have students who are looking, saying, well, damn, if Dabo can't keep things clean and we got this dude, we damn sure ain't going to be protected. We damn sure aren't going to be clean. We're damn sure aren't going to be safe. And now you're running up into a situation where you are asking students to put themselves in a health risk situation that's beyond just a game of football.
Well, what's happening?
And in some cases, you're having people who are in terms of leadership, like a Chip Kelly, who they already don't trust, is now supposed to be the one who's supposed to help navigate through this. I don't know.
What's happening in the world of sports in general is people are getting tested as they come in. They're not being tested on the outside. So when they get ready to come to start the activities and their training, they're getting tested. So this is why there's such a large amount of guys at facilities, at schools, contracting the virus. They're coming in off the streets with no symptoms, no nothing. They get tested. They're not in there lifting weights and running, and all of a sudden they catch it. They're getting tested there, and they're like, oh, God. So you're going to have that. Now, whether or not the UCLA student body athletic department trusts that Chip Kelly is going to keep it right, if guys come in and they're clean and nothing's wrong, that it's going to stay that way, that's where the trust factor is. Because once you come and they test, I wouldn't be surprised when USC starts July, I think SC starts up on July 6th. I wouldn't be surprised if 20 members of the football program all of a sudden test positive. Because think about it. You're dealing with young athletes. They're not going to go to the testing facilities. They're looking at them long Q-tips, sticking them swabs. They like, I already know where their minds are at. They like, man, that thing gonna hit the top of my brain. But when they go into the university, it's a mandatory situation. There's no getting out of it.
Dak Prescott's gonna sign. He's just not gonna sign what we thought he's gonna sign. That's next on the morning show on 710 ESPN.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your goldfish to sing Bizet's Carmen? There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
So, Keith, should I stop holding my breath? Should I stop thinking that Dak Prescott and the Cowboys are going to get this thing done? He's going to sign the franchise tag. He's going to get about $31.5 million to play this upcoming season, 31.4 to be exact. He's expected to sign it today. Does that mean the long-term deal is over?
No. No, that doesn't. It's all about buying time, man. That's really what secure your bag right now at the $31-plus million for a one-year deal. But it's also about negotiating a long-term deal. You get in there, you negotiate a long-term deal, try to figure it out. At the end of the day, he's going to be the starting quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys on opening day one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the long-term deal will get done. It's just they're not playing football no time soon. So what's the rush, I guess?
But it's not. We've been talking about this for the better part of two seasons. That Jared Goff
you might
is done.
Talk about,
Carson
you might
Wentz
talk
is
about
done.
It till December.
Why? This is the part. This is that I don't get, because I get that he's next. Cool. I get that the number is probably pretty close to determined. Cool. I understand that they're probably arguing over structure about how much you're going to give me at the beginning as opposed to how much you're going to give me late. I want the money first. No, I want to give it to you later. Okay, fine. That, like you said, he's going to be the quarterback of this football team.
But what
is the variable? What is the variable that they can't figure out where everybody else has figured out how to get their quarterback signed long term?
What if they say to themselves, you know what? He really not like that to us. Ding. What if they really saying that?
Ding.
What if they're really?
That's what
we're saying,
trying to tell you.
What if
you
almost made
we've
me cuss?
We've been trying to tell you that for
you
months,
almost made
man.
Me cuss and get in trouble by going in on you. So leave me alone.
it's been 2 years.
Maybe they're deciding that he's their Kirk Cousins. That at the end of the day, he's good, but not so great that they want to give him the type of money and structure that he thinks he deserves. They may not want to do that. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's the Kirk Cousins, Washington Redskins.
So maybe the deal's not coming, right?
No. There's a deal, but it's their deal, not your deal. It's their deal. It's a deal, right? It's we're going to give you $100-something million. But we're going to do it this way because we don't really believe in you, and you're trying to do it as if you Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, and we don't believe that. And that's
ladies
okay.
And
there's nothing wrong
ladies and gentlemen.
With them feeling that way. Why is that a problem?
It's that there isn't.
Ladies,
but
ladies
is
and gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, I need you to please raise your glasses. I would
yes.
like to introduce Keyshawn Johnson. Keyshawn yes. Johnson, welcome to the party.
That's not what I said. I said them.
It's just like, he's late, but he's finally here.
Stop trying to put words in my mouth, little Raj. That's not what I said.
You've been doing it for 2 years.
I said
we got 2 years of tape.
I said them, not me. I said them. You're not going to put words in my mouth.
No, we're not putting words in your mouth. You said it.
Shut up. You're not even supposed to be talking on the radio show right now.
Key, I certainly have – I can't speak for anyone else, but I've certainly – it's been disrespectful from Jump Street. Oh, saying it's disrespectful from Jump Street, and that what they're trying to tell you is that they don't think he's like that. I've been saying that since Jump. Kyle Shanahan just signed an extension. Kyle Shanahan signed an extension. Kyle Shanahan didn't have a job before Dak Prescott started playing. And he barely has been in his job today, and he already has an extension he didn't even need. They didn't even need to give him an extension. But they made a decision in San Francisco that Kyle is like that. We like that. We're going to lock that in.
Coaches are different than players, man. Coaches are different. They're viewed differently.
But Jared Goff, they made the decision on Goff. They made the decision on Wentz.
Because the Rams made the decision on Jared Goff, that don't mean – that the Rams wish they didn't make that decision. We just – they locked in now. So, at the end of the day, they made a decision when they felt good about Jared Goff. Do they feel good about that same decision right now? Do they feel like, okay, oh, well, do they still feel good about that same decision today that they made 2 years ago?
What changed for the Cowboys, though, Keith? Because
nothing's changed nothing's changed for the Cowboys. What I'm simply saying is maybe they, because we're all trying to figure out what's taking so long, what's going on, blah, blah, blah. There's nothing that's changed. Maybe at the end of the day, they have always said he's not the quarterback that we want to tie up with the type of money that he wants. We think he's a guy that's serviceable, that's good enough, and we can win with him, but he hasn't shown us that he's Troy Aikman. He hasn't given us that. He hasn't shown us that for us to make that hard commitment to him. They've been saying that. They've probably been saying that to him all along. We're not in negotiations. All we're looking at is the numbers that's being floated out, the conversations that's being put in the media. We certainly don't know that. They may say to themselves, he's Kirk Cousins to us.
It's a dangerous game to play.
We don't want to invest a long-term deal in him. No, it's not.
Because think about it. If he decides that, okay, they're not – the Kirk Cousins, let's use him as an example. Kirk Cousins, they did this game in Washington, and now he's somewhere else. And they are now going through
what?
Whether or not Dwayne
Redskins
Haskins
is happy?
Guy.
You think the Redskins happy somewhere else?
I don't know that they're happy having Dwayne Haskins as their quarterback.
In all honesty, what has Kirk Cousins done that Dwayne Haskins hasn't?
Well, he's better than Kirk Cousins, better quarterback than Dwayne Haskins right
and
now.
Dwayne Haskins make about $1 million at Kirk Cousins.
I understand that, but my point was exactly this, Key. The Cowboys could find themselves with the next Dwayne Haskins, which is not as good as Kirk Cousins and not as good as Dak Prescott. Dak's that really interesting guy that –
no,
you'd probably like to do a little better, but you could also do a whole hell of a lot worse. There are more guys that are worse than Dak Prescott than there are better.
I got Dak Prescott for the next 2 years. If he does, if he take us to the Super Bowl this year, guess what? I ain't got no problem giving him $400 million. If he takes us to the Super Bowl the following year, I ain't got no problem giving him $500 million. But I'm not going to do it today. That's what they basically are saying. They basically are still saying it's a wait-and-see approach unless he takes the deal that we like. Because remember what
I've
always told
you.
They've been looking at him for 2 years to make a decision. 2 years. 2 years to make it a decision. Last year and the year before. Or this season, past season, and the year before when Zeke. That's it. But you can't judge him.
It seems like it's been longer.
Year. No, he's only been in the league.
It seems like it's long.
He's been in four years.
Yeah, he's been in there 4 years, and for all 4 years, they've been saying, let's wait and see.
No, you can't say wait and see for 4 years because he's under a rookie contract. He wasn't supposed to be the starter's rookie year. Even though he balled out, you can't pay him after his rookie season.
Look at Jerry Jones's comments about Dak Prescott. From the very beginning, it was wait and see. He never said Dak is our guy in his rookie year. So this is what I'm saying. It's been a constant wait and see.
You can't make him your guy when Tony Romo is right there. He had a nice flash.
All I'm saying, Key, is that from the very beginning, the Cowboys via Jerry Jones has always said wait and see on Dak Prescott. Always, since he was a rookie. Always. And now you're still saying it's been four damn years.
I have no problem with taking a wait and see approach to see what he is before I make a decision to pay a dude on the type of money that he's asking for. I have no problem. If I got my franchise tag for me at my disposal for the next couple of years and I can exercise that right, why wouldn't I?
Jared Goff was the first pick, long-term deal. Carson Wentz, second pick, long-term deal. Then there's a whole bunch of guys that went before Dak Prescott. Lynch, Hackenberg, Brissett, Kessler, Cook, then Prescott.
Where has that gotten the Philadelphia Eagles? Where has it gotten them? Nowhere. Carson Wentz, they went out and drafted a quarterback because they're afraid that Carson Wentz ain't going to be there for them. But they tied up all this money.
Is that because they think he's not good enough or because he can't stay on the field?
It's probably a combination. It could be a little bit of combination of both. But the fact of the matter is they went out there and got a quarterback in Jalen Hurts because they need somebody that they think can be a nice backup because this dude ain't what we thought on or off the field. Okay, if he's on the field half the time, he ain't giving us nothing. And when he's off the field, he ain't giving us nothing. So when you look at that Prescott situation and you look at Jerry and them, they're saying $31 million, you know, $62, $63 million over the next 2 years. We're willing to give him that. But if what if he goes this year under the franchise tag and they go and they make the wild card, they lose. And then the following year, they make the wild card and they lose. Or they don't make the playoffs 2 years in a row. Now what? What if they'd have tied him up and gave him the $200 million? But because if he goes and he takes him to the NFC Championship game, then the Super Bowl, guess what? They're going to back the truck up for him. Or else he's going to be able to leave because they only can tag him twice. Then he can leave and be a free agent, and somebody else will back the truck up for him. But while they got his rights right now, they can't back the truck up for him. No, we're not.
So we're saying the same thing.
No, we're not.
Yeah, we are. Which is they're still in a wait and see mode. That's what you're saying.
Maybe based on what he's asking for, we don't know what he's asking for. LZ, we don't know.
All right. Well, you know what?
I want $250 million. I want it all guaranteed, and I want it all paid in 30 days. We don't know.
We will start with that. Take it or shake it. Coming up next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. All right, Key, let's stick with Dak here for a second. If Dak signs the franchise tag, it means a long-term deal will not get done before the start of the season. Take it or shake it.
Shake it.
Oh, shake it. Oh,
you still believing?
I've been telling you, bro.
It doesn't mean that it won't get done. It's just it makes things probably a little more difficult because if he's willing to play for the $31 million and bet on himself for the $31 million, then he's going to have to obviously post big numbers, take them a long ways for them to come back and revisit it. Now, Kirk Cousins was able to parlay his 2 years in Washington to something positive in Minnesota, but guess what? The Redskins ain't missing nothing. What are they missing? Okay, we got an extra one or two playoff games that we hadn't had in years. That's pretty much, and it wasn't Kirk Cousins that led Minnesota to the playoffs. So when you're looking at the Dallas Cowboys situation, they're probably looking at it the same way and saying, well, we want him to prove the structure and the money that he wants. We want him to prove that he deserves that versus what we have on the table for him.
What they're missing in Washington, to answer your question, is basic competency at that position. Kirk Cousins is not Aaron Rodgers, but he's a competent NFL quarterback. And right now, they've got an inexperienced guy trying to figure it out. That's what they're missing.
Yeah, but when you look at the grand scheme of things, the long-term situation with Kirk Cousins, if they would have backed up the truck and gave him $200 million, the team would be where it's at still today. They would have a new head coach, all of those sort of things. You'd be tied to a quarterback that you didn't really believe in the first place. So why put yourself in that position if you're a front office guy? $31 million is a lot of money, man.
Yes, it is.
You know, it's a lot of money. We can't, you know, he's getting paid $31 million this year. Now, you go out there and you show him again that you could do leaps and bounds, then at the end of the day, you can name your structure and your price. He's not in the name your structure and price position right now. Obviously, that's why he has to sign a franchise tag.
All right, let's move on to another one here. NASCAR will never be able to eliminate racism in its sport. Take it or shake it.
Take it.
Oh, take it.
Yeah, I don't think it's too deep. I mean, it's real. It's deep, right? I mean, it's been there since I don't even know when NASCAR was created, but whenever it was created, the foundation is already set. So, you know, it's so long of a history that it's going to be hard because there's people there that believe in what that is. They believe in it. I mean, you saw it at Talladega, like you said, they still flying flags and still doing things because they believe in that. Now, within NASCAR, you're not ever going to completely eliminate bigotry and racism. You could lessen it to a degree, but who are you hiring? Who are you bringing in to oversee certain things, to teach you, to show you how to do things a different way and not the old boy traditional way of the 1940s. Like,
well, that's the problem. Their customer, their you know, quintessential customer is somebody that's not down with your cause. That they're
yeah,
in this
but
weird
but just,
spot
just,
where
just because
their
they're not
number
down
one
with
customer
your cause, doesn't mean you can't hire people to come in and help change some things to a degree. You look at the
well,
NBA.
I get that. You can try to fix the people that are under your flag. For instance, like NASCAR can have NASCAR people that are not like that, but you're also selling a sport to people that are like that. And so that I have something over here that I want it to be anti-racist. I want it to be progressive. I want it to be the way that we all hope things would be, but I'm going to try to sell it to people that are flying the flag and hanging nooses.
Yeah,
I mean, those two things don't add up.
But you're going to have a section of those people right now, and you're never going to get rid of all of them. But as you get rid of some of them, that's better than, you know, you could put them back in the closet, so to speak. You know, mm-hmm. You could do that. Yes, it may alienate them to a degree where you feel like they're not going to support. But just like anything, man, people start off, I ain't with that. But they go gravitate right back to it because that's all they know. And I think that at the end of the day, it'll be major pushback in certain situations. And fans will say, I'm not supporting them anymore. And you'll look up a year or two from now, them people will be sitting right in them stands.
Let's move on to the next one here. Chip Kelly will get fired by the end of this upcoming football season.
Take it or shake it.
Yeah.
They're gonna blow him out, man. They shouldn't have never got rid of Jim Moore, though. That was a bad move when they did that. They should have let Jim see it through. But they think that they wanted to be Alabama and Clemson, and they thought they was gonna catch SC on the down slope and bring in Chip Kelly, and he was getting ready to do something. But it hasn't worked out. And, you know, for whatever reasons, I think it just all passed him by.
That's the question, though, right? What are the reasons? Because Chip Kelly at Oregon had a great deal of success. I know he goes to the NFL, and it really didn't work there for very long before he had to come back to the college game. But if you go back to when they hired Chip Kelly, UCLA, that is, it was a coup. That was a great hire for them. This was a guy that Florida was aggressively trying to hire as well. UCLA got him. Now, you can make the argument that Jim Moore was on the right track and he might have gotten there, but that they upgraded to Chip Kelly felt like a huge win at the time. It's been a disaster. What are the reasons?
It felt that way from a national scale, but when you're paying attention and you dive into football like I was, it felt always like a disaster to me. You know, George Sedona used to be on the show or screaming, oh, Chip Kelly's back. Oh, he's gone. I said, man, ain't nobody worried about Chip Kelly. Chip, because when you look at the Oregon teams, that deal was developed by Mike Bellotti. Mike Bellotti developed that structure. Chip Kelly fell into it and took it to caught it right at a time where Mike Bellotti was leaving after he developed it, and he took off with it and had some success. And then parlayed that into the NFL gig. And then at that point in time, everybody caught on to him and who he was. And then they fell in love with him. We're going to hire him in San Francisco. That was a disaster. Didn't work out. And in UCLA, they got tricked into hiring him because Jim Moore was coming off a bad season or two. And they got tricked into hiring him. And that's what happens when you have non-football people running things like, you know, the money guys over at UCLA that don't know anything about football, they go out and they fall for the sucker move, and they fell for Chip Kelly.
Let's take a listen very quickly to Brett Favre, who says that he believes Colin Kaepernick will be looked at similarly to the way that Pat Tillman is viewed as a hero.
It's not easy for a guy his age, black or white, Hispanic, whatever, to stop something that you've always dreamed of doing and put it on hold, maybe forever, for something that you believe in. You know, I can only think of right off the top of my head, Pat Tillman's another guy who did something similar. And we regard him as a hero. So I assume that hero status will be stamped with Kaepernick as well.
Colin Kaepernick will ultimately be looked at as a hero. Take it or shake it.
Well, I shake it.
Okay, I'll shake it then.
All right,
I don't really know what Brett mean by hero.
Somebody who did something for a larger cause. Somebody who believed in something bigger than themselves and took a giant risk and paid a huge price.
Well, I just don't look at it like that. I look at he took a chance on something and paid a huge cause because his career was derailed for standing up for the rights of all blacks and minorities and police brutality and social reform and racism and justice and all the different issues that we face as a culture here in the United States and across the world. I think that I look at that, but I don't look at it as a hero status, so to speak, where Pat Tillman was serving the country in the military form and decided to give up football to go be in the military and, you know, was fatally shot by one of his men
friendly
that was
fire.
One of his guys that was military with him. So I just look at it as two different things in terms of the hero thing.
Ryan Hollis is going to join us next. We'll talk about the reboot of the NBA. That's coming up on the morning show on 710 ESPN.